Okay, I'm going to transition out of this item right now because we have a very patient general manager from the Montecito Sanitary District. I'm going to move on to the executive officer's report and just focus on the one component of that, that is the short Montecito Sanitary District debris flow response item. So on January 9th, a debris flow resulting from a severe rain event on hill slopes burned by the Thomas Fire severely damaged portions of Montecito. The debris flow closed 101 for about 3 weeks and impacted Montecito Sanitary District's collection system. Diane Gabriel, General Manager for the Sanitary District, is here to provide a look into the impacts, the district's responses, and preparations for possible future similar events.
Brief moment while we load our presentation.
Can we have Diane on this matter as well?
So while we get our presentation loaded up, thank you for allowing us this time. I'm Diane Gabriel, General Manager and District Engineer for the Montecito Sanitary District. And presenting with me is Mark Carlo. He's a grade 5 wastewater treatment plant operator for the Montecito Sanitary District. Before we get started, I would like to personally acknowledge some regional board staff members, Peter Von Longen, Sheila Soderberg, and Harvey Packard, really for their genuine concern and understanding that they had for us dealing with this devastating situation we found ourselves in after the January 9th Thomas Fire debris flow. So I'm going to see how this works. Oops. Want to forward me to the next slide? Yeah. So the outline of our presentation is going to include some background information on the district. Let's see, there's the pointer. There we go. Overview of the Thomas Fire debris flow event. Impacts that the district sustained to our collection system, so our pipelines, as well as the treatment plant facility and process of wastewater treatment. Our preparedness efforts for future predicted debris flows and our plans for continuing our MPDES permit compliance. And then we'll have some time for questions and answers. Some brief background on the district. We're a small organization, independent special district. We serve the Montecito community, which is an unincorporated area of Santa Barbara County. We have 16 full-time employees. We have 4 folks that run our wastewater treatment plant and 4 that maintain our 75 miles of collection system piping and our 4 sewer lift stations. Brief information on our collection system. The area we serve is just around 9 square miles, a population of 9,000 people, 3,109 properties. We have 75 miles of gravity sewer main. So with manholes, which are the access ports to the pipelines below. Of that 75 miles, over the years, we have rehabilitated 26 miles of that system. Most of our pipes were put in the 1960s. They're vitrified clay pipe. We've rehabilitated that with in-situ methods, no-dig methods. So our system is in good working order. We have over 2,000 manholes and cleanouts. And prior to January 9th, we had not had a sanitary sewer overflow since December of 2015. As far as our treatment plant, we're working under the MPDES permit, the order number stated there. Our permit was to expire in January of 2018. We were extended under a letter that was issued, administrative extension that was issued to us in February of 2018. The capacity of our wastewater treatment plant is 1.5 MGD. Before the Thomas Fire, we were treating roughly 550,000 gallons a day. Currently, we're treating 450,000 gallons per day. We discharge our treated effluent with secondary treated effluent to the Pacific Ocean. It's diffused out through what would be a shallow, short ocean outfall, 1,500 feet long, 35 feet of water depth. Our service area, the boundary is here in the red. Our treatment plant site is right here on the ocean side of the 101 freeway. And we have four sewer lift stations where wastewater is collected there by gravity and then pumped a certain distance to where it can flow by gravity again. And backing up, this mountain area here above our community had burned in the Thomas Fire. And with rain in the forecast for the evening of January 8th, the County Office of Emergency Management issued this evacuation order using this map. The red area, which is above Highway 192, better known as East Valley Road, this red area was under mandatory evacuation. All residents were to leave. The yellow area below Highway 192 was a voluntary evacuation area. So our treatment plant site and our four sewer lift stations were in this voluntary area. So as we would for any predicted storm in any winter, we went about all of our normal preparedness. We had our generators fueled. We have generators at our lift stations at our treatment plant that have auto transfer switches that would turn on automatically should we lose power from Southern California Edison. So when we left the office and we vacated the treatment plant for the night, which is our typical way, we are unmanned during the evening hours, but we always have two people on call. We made sure that additional staff would be ready in the event that we had any issues, but we felt that we were prepared. But as you'll see from this video, really no amount of preparedness would have made us ready for what we experienced that evening.
The Thomas Fire left behind a massive burn scar in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties.
Right now, evacuation orders stretch from near Goleta to east of Carpinteria.
The Thomas Fire came roaring through 1 month ago. Now, preparations for the second battle begins, as bare hillsides threaten to dump tons of mud on the houses below. In fact, it is so potentially dangerous that mandatory evacuations are underway in the hillside communities, and sheriff's deputies are checking to make sure the homes are empty and putting tape on mailboxes to mark the fact nobody's home.
Scenes of devastation coming in now after the wildfires, now staggering amounts of rain triggering deadly mudslides tonight in California. Blood and debris rushing down hills on the major highway, shutting down the 101 in Montecito. The number of people who may be missing at this hour is now up to 43.
I never can imagine such a scene.
From above, it looks like a war zone. The Coast Guard plucking families where search teams on the ground could not reach them. Some of the victims of these mudslides may have been carried in this river of mud.
Victims who died during the storm and mudslides early Tuesday range of age from 3 to 89. 4 of them are children. Authorities say the death toll could rise. 43 people are considered missing.
the area now 3 days, but now no sign of survivors. Just a pipe well from the mountains all the way into the ocean.
I'm so sorry.
So this is a view of the 101 freeway, which remained closed for 12 days following. Edison Power did go out. Our Frontier landline phone service went out. Cox Cable and internet service was down. Cell phone service was spotty at best. But the district's backup generators all turned on. We were pumping wastewater. We were receiving wastewater into the treatment plant. All of our lift stations were working. However, they were inundated with mud. This is a view of one of our sewer lift stations. This is an electrical room that should not have mud. This is not wastewater in here. This is mud and debris that made its way into this underground facility. Similarly here, this is an area of the pump station, of the lift station, that should be dry. This is not sewage. This is mud that, with the debris flow, opened up doors and hatches and got into the facility. But the facility was working fine. Thankfully, we were able to get into the treatment plant site from the Santa Barbara side. From this Ventura side or Summerlin side, we were not able to get to our facility because of the freeway being blocked. And this is really some of the views of what we found in the first hours was just how would we ever assess where our facilities, our manholes, our pipelines were. Thankfully, our crews are very familiar with the locations of our pipelines. We have an aggressive cleaning and video program where our crews do go out regularly and in some years video over 10 miles of pipeline and clean virtually our whole system. So we went about planning where we would go first. And this is a map that really shows what happened in this debris flow. It did take the county some days to figure out exactly what went on, but there was a debris flow on the Montecito Creek area, another debris flow on the San Ysidro Creek area, and one on Buena Vista Creek and Romero Creek area. So we knew our facilities in these areas would probably be damaged, but we made the determination that it wasn't a smart idea to get out there with the first responders. They were searching for people. Search dogs were looking for live people and then eventually looking for the dead. And we thought it best to get our plan together. We called an emergency meeting of our governing board of directors on January 11th, the morning of. They declared a state of emergency and gave us the authority to enter into emergency contracts so we would not have to bid for the work we assumed we'd need to do. So we hired National Plant Services out of Long Beach to bring up a whole fleet of sewer cleaning machines, as well as CCTV, the videoing capability, pipeline videoing. We hired Blois Construction out of Oxnard because we figured we'd have some pipelines that needed to be fixed. And we hired Phoenix Civil Engineering out of Santa Paula to help us with mapping, inspection of the work that we figured we'd need to do, and just general management. And here we are trying to get our plan together. Lots of maps figuring out where we would go. We have 2,000 manholes out there. First, we realized, well, we need to find them. So Blois Construction helped us with moving the debris that was over top of most of our facilities. Sometimes it was under feet of debris like this. And here we are. We found a manhole. Every time we found a manhole, it was marked in green. And then, well, here's another one marked in green. And then our crews, with the assistance from our mutual aid partners, the City of Santa Barbara, Carpinteria Sanitary District, and Goleta Sanitary District, went about opening over 1,800 of these manholes, looking inside, documenting what we found. And if we found debris, it would be mapped. And that's when we said, okay, National Plant Services, with your sewer cleaning machines, we need to get out there. We need to start taking this debris out. And these are the kinds of locations they went to. Entering a manhole, vacuuming out the debris, or if needed, in this case, they're sending a person down in to the manhole. And then we went with these trucks to the treatment plant. The debris was brought to our wastewater treatment plant for processing. Next step was to video the inside of the line, make sure we got all of the debris out. Here's what goes on inside a truck like that. It's this is a view of the inside of an 8-inch pipe. You can see all the debris that's still inside. This location obviously still needed cleaning. This is a photo of one of our more challenging situations. This is an 8-inch pipe. It has about a 7-inch diameter rock on the inside. Now I'm going to show you exactly the photos of the damage. Once we did all this inspection, these are photos of the damage that we actually found, in addition to where we had sanitary sewer overflows. So first, this is the Montecito Creek debris flow area. We had a sanitary sewer overflow here, and we had a break in the pipeline here at the X, which then sent a lot of debris into the pipelines here shown in red. And here's what it looked like, Montecito Creek. This is a manhole, and it was sheared off completely. The pipeline is here. You can see it's been crushed. The top of the pipe is gone. And this is the same location. Again, the manhole painted green so we can see. And Blois Construction went about making the repairs. This is what it looks like today. The manhole's been restored. Some rocks put to protect it. No evidence of the pipeline that's been buried and encased with reinforced concrete. On the San Ysidro Creek area, similar situation. We had one sanitary sewer overflow here and two breaks in the pipeline, the most significant one being here along the 192 under a Caltrans bridge. The pipeline is in this area. Caltrans had to work for about 8 days. This was a very, very large boulder underneath the bridge. So we had to wait our turn to be able to access our pipe. And when we did, we had 48 hours to make the repair. Blois Construction worked around the clock, again, putting in new pipe, reinforcing it with concrete encasement. And this is what it looks like today, buried under the stream bed under the bridge. Lastly, on the Romero Creek area, we had a sanitary sewer overflow and some pipe that was also eroded away. This pipeline here was to have concrete encasement over it. You can see some of it left here. Again, the repair has been made, and this is what it looks like today. And all of that, I guess, financially, we spent over $1.6 million. We're in the process of, we've submitted all of that to FEMA. We're hopeful that we will be reimbursed maybe 80% of that. Now I'm going to turn it over to Mark Carlo to explain to you the impacts that we had to our wastewater treatment process.
Okay, thank you, Diane. Before beginning, I'd like to thank the Regional Board for giving us this opportunity to share our story. I'd like to start with a brief explanation of what happens here. First and foremost, our mission as operators is to comply with our NPDES permit. We do this by using a biological treatment process to convert raw sewage into clean water. As the wastewater flows through the series of tanks, It undergoes aerobic digestion, followed by clarification and disinfection. The treated water is then diffused into the Pacific Ocean through our Ocean Outfall Pipeline. During the January 9th Thomas Fire debris flow event, the treatment plant was not directly impacted by the debris flows. However, there was debris that entered the plant by flowing through the sewer system. For reference, the image on the left is what the flow into the plant looks like on a typical day. It is tan in color, has a trace amount of solid material, and has a musky odor. The image on the right is from January 9th. As you can see, it's a blackish-brown slurry. The debris from the collection system was making its way to the treatment plant. And while this is only a snapshot from a single day, the flow into the plant looked like this for weeks. So over these weeks, a considerable amount of debris and inorganic material entered our treatment plant. Prior to the debris flow, you can see that our plant carries a baseline of some inorganic material. That is normal. It's due to the trace amount of grit in typical sanitary sewer waste. Things changed drastically on January 9th. Over the span of 3 weeks, we took in 12 tons of grit, mud, sand, and silt. From then, it took 6 months for our system to fully recover. We had to very gradually pump out the inorganic material only as our plant microorganisms began to heal, repopulate, and thrive again. This was a prolonged recovery process because of the drastic flow reductions. To highlight those flow reductions, here's a snapshot of our average plant flows before, during, and after the disasters. Prior to the Thomas Fire, our plant flows averaged 550,000 gallons per day. The first flow reduction is due to the Thomas Fire. The second flow reduction is due to the debris flow. During these evacuations, fewer residents meant less toilet flushing, less showering, less water down the drains, and ultimately, less wastewater into the treatment plant. It was following the debris flow that our plant experienced an all-time low flow. Repopulation of Montecito began in late January, and since then, flows have returned to 450,000 gallons per day.
What percentage of your normal flow is that?
That's about 80%.
And I have a question for you. Is all of this debris getting into the system through the manhole covers? Because your storm drains are separated, right?
Storm drains are separate. So, yes, those breaks that we showed you, so that sheared off manhole
right.
And the openings in the pipe, exactly.
That's
the debris had gotten in there, migrated through the system. Again, it's a gravity system, so it's all flowing downhill towards the treatment plant or one of the lift stations. And we did our best to try to get it out with the vacuuming that National Plant Services did for us. They actually cleaned over 31 miles of our 75 miles of pipeline. But there's still some residuals and the early hit, like Mark was showing, that the initial, before we could get it out, brought in tons of this material into the treatment.
Out of curiosity, did you have GPS coordinates for each of the manholes prior to this?
No.
Is that something that you've added? Because they can be pretty accurate.
They can be pretty accurate. It's definitely something that we've done at kind of a cost analysis of it and the accuracy of where you can really get with it. And in this case, you know, we knew where they were. We couldn't just get to them. You know, you saw the debris that we had to move. We knew kind of where it was, but we had to move tons of material before we could get to them. Adapting our plant to the extreme low flows.
So as operators, it was our job to adapt our treatment process to handle this unusual situation where we were not receiving human sanitary sewer waste in the volumes we were used to. Both the hydraulic and the solids detention times in these tanks far exceeded our target ranges. So how did we respond? Basically, as the flow into the plant dropped below half of normal, we took half of our tanks offline. So you can see with the red X, we took an aeration basin offline and followed that by taking two clarifier tanks offline. After adapting to the flow reductions, the next challenge was sustaining the health of our plant microorganisms. As I mentioned earlier, a treatment process is absolutely reliant on the health of living, breathing microorganisms. This is a photo of stock ciliates. These microorganisms, among others, are what we like to see. When these microorganisms are thriving, our treatment performance is at its best. Now, there are other microorganisms that we do not like to see. These worms are associated with suboptimal treatment performance. Following the debris flow, we were striving to prevent these worms by maintaining the healthy and beneficial microorganisms that ultimately keep us in compliance. So how do we cultivate the favorable microorganisms? Well, typically, human sanitary sewer waste is the food that those microorganisms need to eat in order to live. Following the debris flow, those healthy microorganisms were basically starving. In that situation, it was necessary to add a supplemental food source to keep the healthy microorganisms alive. From this photo, you can see that we are adding dog food as an alternative food source. In the wastewater industry, this is actually not an uncommon practice to use dog food in this application. We carried this out for 17 days, adding 140 pounds per day until Montecito was repopulated and we started to receive human sanitary sewer waste again. With each day, we are closely tracking our key performance indicators, one of which is final effluent turbidity. It's a measure of how clear the water is as it leaves our plant. Typically, that's between 2 and 4 NTU. Following the debris flow, our turbidity trended upwards, reaching 58 NTU on January 16th. We responded by 1, increasing our polymer dose to aid with particle settling, and 2, increasing our coolant dose to strengthen disinfection. Fortunately, those process changes were effective, and in the subsequent days, our turbidity trended in a more favorable direction. This is effluent turbidity again, now from the perspective of permit compliance. Note that this is the maximum monthly turbidity. It is not the day-by-day analysis you saw on the previous slide. January experienced the highest turbidity result, but following that, we stabilized to lower levels and stayed well below the red line, which is the permit limit. As for other permitted parameters, this is the maximum 7-day median total coliform for the past 12 months. This is the performance metric that could shut down local beaches if we exceeded the 23 NPN 7-day median limit. By increasing our polymer and chlorine doses, our disinfection remained effective and we did not come close to the permit limit. This is our effluent total suspended solids. Our permit dictates that we remain below the red line at 30 milligrams per liter. By keeping our plant microorganisms healthy and adapting our tanks to the low flows, we stayed below the permit limit, and while we had elevated levels for subsequent days, we did stabilize, staying below the limit. This is our effluent CPOD, another permitted parameter. And despite the elevated levels, our process changes kept us in compliance. I'll begin to wrap up by showing you these two photos of our final effluent quality. The image on the left, like you saw earlier, is representative of a typical day where our effluent is crystal clear. January 9th is on the right. As you can see, it is actually quite clear. We were able to more or less maintain this quality during the duration of the aftermath. These results are largely due to our team of capable, competent, and enthusiastic treatment plant operators. With teamwork and collaboration, we were able to overcome the challenges brought on by the Thomas Fire debris flow event. With that, thank you.
Shortly after Montecito was repopulated,
Sorry. County Office of Emergency Management released this map showing the risk areas that still exist. Because of the Thomas Fire, the area that burned here, the area is very likely to have future debris flows. These areas in red were deemed to be extreme risk areas, where if in a rain event of 1/2 inch for a half hour intensity, but over just a 15-minute period, you would be at extreme risk of loss of life and property if you stayed in the red area. The yellow areas were deemed to be high risk, but mainly because you would be cut off. They were telling folks if you stayed there in a similar rain event that you'd have to be prepared to provide for yourself for 14 days because you might be cut off from all services, including emergency access by roadway. So thankfully, our wastewater treatment plant site is outside of the yellow area, but all of our lift stations are within the extreme risk area. And we began to wonder, all right, if this happens again, how can we be more prepared than we were last time? So we decided to lease a larger sewer cleaning machine. We actually have sewer cleaning ability ourselves, but not to the extent that we needed to remove like that that 7-inch diameter rock. So we leased this machine for the rest of the rainy season. We also were very proactive and capped off the private sewer laterals onto the properties where homes were destroyed. That was done immediately, really. We've done that for 56 properties, and those are shown here in the orange. These are the zones where we have several properties that are capped. The other thing that we did was to install what we're calling pipeline protectors. So back to the question about how did this material enter in? Was it from the manhole? So if you can envision if the top of a manhole got sheared off, could migrate immediately down to the flow line of the pipe. So we fabricated these out of plywood. They can fold in half, but then they are inserted into the manhole. And here you can see one in place. So if the lid is off of this manhole, but take the example of once we had the lid back on, the debris flow came, the lid was sheared off, the cone of the manhole, the shaft was, this would protect it. There'd still be material just in that small portion, but it would not get down into the pipe. So we installed these in 85 locations.
Oh, that was my question. So they're installed. This is not something that you would only do in a situation where you have a warning for a heavy rain event.
No, we are leaving them there for now until we get out of what we would say this risk time, which they say can last, depending on rain and growth in the mountains, 3 to 8 years from now, our area could be subject to additional debris flows.
So I'm confused because a manhole serves a function.
Well, if we were to clean that pipe, as you can see here, we're lowering it down, going back to this one, it has ropes. We would pull it out. We can pull it out, so if there's no debris on top of it, we want to clean that pipe, we'll pull it out, we'll put our sewer cleaning machine in there or our camera to video the line, and then we can put this back in.
Got it.
Okay.
What kind of pressure and boulders and debris would it take to bust through that?
Well, we're thinking that it will definitely work. It's kind of trapped there. Most manholes have this shelf there before it enters the zone where the pipe is, so it won't just collapse and fall into the pipe. Yeah. Hopefully we won't have to test these out, but they are used in the industry when construction and things are going on and you don't want things to fall into your pipeline area. They're actually, by contractors, are called false bottoms, manhole false bottoms. So those were additional things along with our regular preparedness activities. We have on-site diesel storage that can run our treatment plant generator for 3 days. We have our generators serviced and ready at all of our lift stations and at the treatment plant. And we have auxiliary pumping and piping abilities.
Did those generators kick in at the event?
Oh, absolutely. They turned on automatically when Edison Power went out. And that's a necessity. We've had that in existence for quite some time at all of our facilities. Because response time is critical. You can't always guarantee that someone might be able to get there in 20 minutes or whatever it takes. And in this case, in the debris flow case, we would not have been able to access our lift stations quick enough. So to have the auto transfer switches is very important. And, well, thinking ahead, our community is still really coping with the recovery efforts. It was truly a traumatic event, and daily we're reminded of the destruction. And there's definitely the fear that this could happen again. But looking forward, we are definitely at the top of our list of plans are to be prepared for potential future debris flows, to hopefully get our FEMA reimbursement. We are also planning to get back to normal, which would be to do this sewer main extension project into an area that would serve properties that are currently on septic systems. It would serve 10 parcels. We also plan to replace our dissolved air flotation thickener at our wastewater treatment plant, as well as replace our aeration blowers and motors for some that are more energy efficient. And we're in the planning stages for a pilot project for recycled water that would serve our treatment plant needs, meaning our landscaping and polymer mixing and cleaning, with about 6,000 gallons of recycled water every day. And as Mark stated earlier, we'll always plan to continue to be in full compliance with our MPDS permit. And with that, we're available for any questions.
I see none, but, certainly, you folks had a big challenge to rise up to it. I think that clearly on the map you indicated, it's not over in terms of potential issues. So obviously you're not letting your guards down, and I'm sure there was also a lot of lessons learned, in this whole process. So I want to thank both of you for also your patience of staying with us later. I was expecting any moment to see the Santa Barbara police come in and evict us because we're way beyond the allowable time we had. But we wanted to give you this opportunity, and I know you were not available a lot of time. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, I can tell you the whole world, across the country. I was out of the state, and people were coming up to me. They know I work in Ohio, and they were coming up to me. You know, I am from California, and they were just blown away with the images and knowing how people were suffering. It's unbelievable and unexpected. So congratulations to minimizing what could have been just a complete and utter catastrophe. We're so sorry for all the loss of life as well.
Yeah. And sure enough, at the risk of being arrested, I think it'd be worth the time to get the names and the positions of the people that are here from the staff.
Yes. I would love to do that.
Yeah. We have Mark Carlo, treatment plant operator.
Right. And I'm pleased to have Carrie Poitras. She's our engineering manager and whiz at PowerPoint and IT and anything else assigned. Rico LaRude, he is our maintenance manager, so he is our GPS right there. He knows exactly where all of our manholes and pipelines are. And he led the charge for all of the crews that opened up that 1,800 manholes and looked inside. And then last but not least, Alex Alonso, he's our operations manager. So overseeing both the treatment plant and all the collection system staff.
Thank you. So thank you, all of you. All your names are now.
One more intern.
Still here.
Hannah Lynch-Cookie. Future environmental engineer.
Right? I'm going to get all the work done. Thank you. And also, Bruce, thank you. That was, you know, very thoughtful of you to suggest recognition to all the staff. Thank you for that.
Are your middle names all start with letter P for patients?
Yeah.
So, without further ado, this concludes our Thursday, June 28, 2018 meeting. It is exactly 6:30 p.m. So thank you. We reconvene tomorrow at 9 a.m.